Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. During his long career in radio broadcasting, Chuck Anderson recorded and saved more than 500 hours of conversations. The collection is an archive of stories and anecdotes that capture the essence of our state in the voices of our people. You can find the full conversations on our website. Head over to sdpb.org/images of the past. Look for the personalities with Chuck Anderson icon on the right side of the page there. But first, here's Chuck joining us on the phone from Huron. Chuck Anderson, welcome back to In the Moment.
Hi, Lori. It's a pleasure to be with you today. But first, let me tell you that last month I was in Sioux Falls seeing Dr. Richard Allen, my dentist, and he said he listens to your show every day while he's having lunch. And last month, if you remember, I said that Pastor Tom Martin at Rapid City, he listens to your program every day while driving to work. So if nothing else, we know that Pastor Tom and Dr. Allen are listening right now. And they thank you for making their day a little brighter.
Well, I thank Dr. Richard Allen and Pastor Tom Martin so much for tuning in. And they're listening to you, too, now. So they're excited.
You're all over the
state. We are all over the state. Let's start with another notable South Dakotan beyond pastors and dentists. We've got an astronaut today.
Yeah.
Tell us the story of the astronaut from South Dakota.
What a wonderful man. Sometimes I feel so lucky, as I know you feel, to be able to just talk to these people, you know, and to visit with them and glean how they grew up. And with the astronaut, he's from Scotland, South Dakota, and we're very proud of him. I had a chance to meet him. We had a big air show here back in about, oh, gosh, the 90s, early 90s. And I had a chance to ask him if he'd come out to the radio station and we could do an interview. And, man, what a, I feel so dumb when I'm around guys like him. He's a West Point graduate. And he's an engineer, and during my show, I mentioned that he had gone up out of the Earth's atmosphere twice, but he even went later. It's three times the man left the Earth.
But you asked him those questions that all of us really want to know, so you get to sort of feel dumb or feel enthusiastic or geek out with all your listeners as well. Let's hear a little bit of your conversation with him, and here he is describing how he feels the night before a launch.
Each individual astronaut feels, you know, has a unique experience that is truly their own, but I think, for me, the night before launch is really the hardest part of the whole flight because it's the only opportunity, or it is the first opportunity, where you've really got time on your hands to think about what's about to take place in the morning. You know, by this time now, you've said goodbye to your family and friends, and you've got about 8 hours before you're going to go to sleep now on this night, what turns out to be the eve of your flight, and to mentally prepare yourself for what's about to take place the next day. I think that the fact that this is always a risky program has to enter your mind.
The night before, the butterflies come a little bit then.
I just felt nervous when he talked about the launch. You know, in the show, I got to cover the most interesting part of the launch is the 3 hours they're sitting in that space rocket. And he got a charge out of me calling it a spaceship, he says, because we call it a vehicle.
Right. Well, speaking of the launch sequence, here he is describing in detail what it's like to experience that launch sequence from the inside.
Yeah.
Now it's 10, 9... At what point do you feel that giant power underneath you?
At 7 seconds before liftoff, the main engines come up to speed, and they have to be at 100% power before a solid rocket booster command will be sent. And at liftoff, of course, solid rocket boosters ignite, and there's no doubt in your mind the significant event in your life has just occurred.
Like in the movies, can you feel the skin going back? Are you taking a lot of G's?
Well, you're not taking so many G's. We only pull about a G and a half at liftoff. You know, we on the pad, we weigh 4.4 million pounds, And vehicle has a little over 6.5 to 7 million pounds of thrust. So we're only pulling a G and a half, but it's but that vehicle is struggling to get out of the atmosphere. I mean, it's just shaking you apart. It's shaking fore and aft and laterally, and making obviously there's a lot of noise. There's a crackling sound as the solid rocket boosters are. It's almost like like a cellophane, kind of a crackle. If you took a piece of cellophane and crackled it, that's a kind of a sound you hear. And this will continue, of course, for the next 2 minutes and 5 seconds while that thing is burning solid rocket boosters to get you out of the atmosphere. Well, once you get rid of solid rocket boosters, there's a big sigh of relief because the liquid control, the liquid engines, the liquid fuel engines, the hydrogen and oxygen engines, we have some control over those.
I love that moment where he says, "There's no doubt that a significant life event has occurred."
What a significant event.
Sort of an understatement.
You know, when he was talking about the most important part of the mission is the night before, I asked him about that, and he said, well, statistically, 1 in 35 space shuttles end in a disaster. He says, so far, he says, we're ahead of that. But what I thought was really interesting was he said, 1 in 15 astronauts don't make it to see their career.
Oh, wow. Well, we better not leave him up there. We better hear a little clip of the last moments where the space shuttle rolls to a stop.
Yes.
Well, I think that that the touchdown, of course, is always a relief. Actually, the wheel stop is even more of a relief than touchdown because you still have to derotate the nose and you still have to bring this vehicle to a controlled stop. And on my first flight, that was at Kennedy Space Center on a runway, on a concrete runway. And remember, this thing has got moats on both sides with hungry alligators. So it's always nice when the wheels come to complete stop and you don't have any more danger of a blown tire or anything that may take you off the side of the runway.
He talked moats about and alligators. Alligators waiting for him on either side. There's a moat where they land.
Oh, my. Now that's not how you want the story to end either, to have a successful mission and then end up with the alligators.
That's right. What a wonderful South Dakotan.
Let's talk about another wonderful South Dakotan today, and that's Jim McKinney. He is the former South Dakota State University band director. How long have you known him? Or tell me how that interview came about.
Well, I've known Jim since my daughter, Laura, first went to college, and she interviewed and auditioned to be with the Drumline, which is really, I don't know if you've seen them. If you haven't, Lori, I really recommend you go somewhere you can hear the South Dakota Drumline. They're terrific. But I got to know him through my daughter, actually. We would go over and watch the various events. And Jim McKinney is one of the most hospitable men you'll ever run into, and it's no wonder that he is considered a legend at South Dakota State. And I thought it was funny, both of us still call it state.
Right. And here he is kind of setting the stage for how band works in college, talking about wanting the kids to have fun, but maybe within parameters. Take a listen.
Yeah.
I think if the band members, as I mentioned a while ago, so many of them are not music majors, and they're in there because they enjoy it and they want to have fun. It's a recreation time for them. And I think the minute that they quit having fun, they quit being in band. I also think the minute that they have too much fun and your performance level drops, then you don't have an audience. So you really have to work to create a fine line there, I think, between having fun and doing a great job.
There's a man who understands
who
he's working with.
He?
Yeah, he does. Maybe from experience, probably as well.
He had one funny thing, if I have a moment.
Yes.
My daughter, Laura, told me about that Jim is not only a funny guy, but very, very serious at rehearsals. They were out on the football field one day, and they had worked hard about 3 hours working on their drum line and the band, about 250 of them out there on the field. And Jim was getting a little excited, and he yelled at him, and he says, "Y'all look like a bunch of cows out there." And when they left the field, guess what they did? They all went moo.
Where is he from originally?
Originally
with
from
that accent.
Georgia.
Georgia, okay.
From Georgia.
So it makes the story even better, really.
Yes, it does. Wonderful
Let's
guy.
Hear This is a fabulous excerpt about, you know, Bob Hope on tour and a little story from Jim McKinney himself.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess like all kids, I started in high school when I went out and bought a drum set.
Which high school?
Well, this is in Georgia, and it's a little town called Hapeville, right outside of Atlanta, H-A-P-E. It always sounds like I'm saying Hateville with a T, but Hapeville. And bought a drum set and started playing in some local rock bands and so forth, and then played through college. And at one time, I actually did some touring with Bob Hope, which was sort of the highlight of my playing, through Oklahoma.
You know, I told you I played with Bob the South Dakota State Fair in 1990.
Oh.
I was Bob. That's incredible.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that. That's great.
You were Bob Hope's drummer, and so was I.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah, we played about 10 shows with him on a tour through Oklahoma and Texas.
He is tough.
Yes, he's very demanding.
All right, so now we have to talk about you, because tell me the story of playing with Bob Hope at South Dakota State Fair.
Fantastic. I auditioned for it, and they had pretty well basically the Huron Area Symphony. We've had a symphony orchestra for many, many, many years in Huron, and a lot of those people were used in their stage band, and Bob Hope doesn't bring his whole band, just the key members like the pianist and people like that. So we had tuxedos. It was really a big deal. And to play for Bob Hope is really, really demanding. It's not all fun when you're at rehearsal. He's a very serious man. But it's one of the highlights of my whole musical career, Lori.
Tell me, was it just because it was Bob Hope himself, because you got to be a part of sort of that legendary, you know, time in entertainment? Or was there something about being on the stage with him that was like none other?
Being on the stage with him, Lori. I mean, he is professional from the word. It's like if you were standing next to Johnny Carson or, you know, visiting with him. The very presence of being with him, you know that you're in the presence of a very high-powered individual. I enjoyed it very much. And it pulled upon me, and also my daughter Laura helped. She helped me set up the drums, and we couldn't get in to the fairgrounds with her because the security was so tight that she wasn't on the roster. And I had my car, and I said, "Look, if Laura doesn't come in, I haven't got anybody to help me set up, and Bob Hope isn't going to have a drummer." And the guy looked at me for a second. He says, "All right, get out of here."
Chuck Anderson, it is always a delight. You are a rock star. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Lori.